Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today you're tuning in to Spell It Out, Magic, Reflections, and Shadows, where I take a topic and run with it. So I'm going to start a series today that is going to be focused on Pluto in honor of it shifting into a new sign, into Aquarius, though it's not going to only focus on the astrology of Pluto. I think it'll be really interesting. So today is going to be kind of an introduction to it. But before we get started, Michael does have a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our show. We've got some great stuff coming up this month. In fact, we have all new guests, which is going to be exciting for us. So just to give you guys an idea of what lies ahead on this coming Tuesday, March the 14th, the topic will be, is witchcraft a religion or a craft? And that is with Sarah Mastros, who is Pittsburgh's leading witch for hire. So that's pretty exciting. We're really looking forward to getting to know her. On March 21st, 2 weeks from now, we have Mavius Lynn on, who is an artist and Thelemite and occultist. And the topic will be Aleister Crowley's Magic for Everyone. And then finishing the month, the last Tuesday on the 28th, we have author Preston Dinette, who's authored a number of books, very prolific author, but his main specialty is UFOs. So for all of you ancient alien fans like me and Krista, you're definitely going to want to tune in for that. And we will discuss whether or not we are alone in the universe with Preston. And I'm just super excited to have him on. These are all just really terrific people. And I think we're just blessed to have such great guests and throughout the history of our show, just such great people that have supported us. So thank you to all of you. Get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. While you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi if you can afford to. It helps us a little with our production costs and so forth. And if you have an idea for a guest or you might like to be a guest yourself, then please reach out to us. Our email is there as well, and we would love to talk to you. So I don't want to take up more time because we have a short episode today. So that's it for me. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. So before I get into the show, I wanted to talk a little bit about why I have decided to focus so deeply on Pluto. It's a combination of reasons. I had already been studying Pluto in the sign of Capricorn because I don't know if it was like 3 or 4 years ago when I was looking at the U.S. chart, I noticed we were going into our Pluto return, which we've just been in, and we're still probably feeling the effects of it. And I got interested in that idea because, you know, only countries really go through Pluto returns. So I started reading up on Pluto. I read some of the, you know, the more, I guess, well-known books on Pluto and astrology. I read Jeffrey Wolf Green's The Evolutionary Journey of the Soul, Volume 1, which was a little overwhelming. He's definitely a kind of a deep astrologer. I also read Healing Pluto Problems with Donna Cunningham, which I really connected to very well. And then because of Jeffrey Wolf Green, I'm so grateful for this. He recommends that people read this book by James Hillman called The Dream and the Underworld, which I'm going to be quoting from today. He says it was one of the best descriptions of Hades' world. And I'm a dream lover, so that appealed to me in a lot of ways. And it really is a fascinating book. So that sort of got me thinking about sort of different ideas around Pluto. And then on top of it all, I've been dealing with Pluto off and on through my life because an astrologer, I don't even know, maybe it was my 30s, pointed out to me that I had Pluto in my seventh house opposing Ceres in my first house. And so there you have the myth of Demeter and Pluto playing out in my life. And it was actually really helpful. I don't know why I never noticed it before that. That's one of the areas we're going to look into, whether or not you are a Plutonian person, because there are some charts that are more oriented towards Pluto, just like other planets, even though most of us will experience Plutonian themes in our life for sure. but there is sort of a difference. So that's sort of the reason, some of the reasons why. And then on top of it all, the last reason is I noticed that Pluto shifting into Aquarius is going to cause Pluto in my own chart to go through my 12th house. And the 12th house with Pluto there is, it's really fascinating. I think I'll be able to look at Pluto from a more metaphysical, spiritual point of view. And I've already started feeling that. And this show is the result of me feeling like, I think Pluto is going to need, not that it needs, I think it's going to have people going to be interested in a reevaluation of Pluto during Pluto in Aquarius, since Aquarius has that energy of the mind and genius and originality. And I already can see from very, very brief research that Pluto is misunderstood. and like many of the myths, if you, you know, not everybody goes and uses mythology with astrology, but I do think it's a good place to start sometimes. And I've already started looking more deeply into the mythology, and I found some new things out about Pluto. So that's sort of my reason for wanting to get involved in it. Not involved, but to do these series of shows. I don't know how many I'm going to do, because obviously you can do quite a lot. But here's some of the ground that I'm hoping to cover in the different shows. So I'm going to look at astrological Pluto, but also in relationship to his siblings, and how that affects the interpretation of Pluto. So, like, for instance, his brothers Neptune and Zeus or Jupiter. And then he's also got sisters as well. I'm going to look at the whole mythology around Persephone too. And as part of the mythology, I'm going to look at the realm of Pluto, Hades, which is not simply a place for punishment or for people that have done bad things, because you have the Eleusinian fields there. And so I'm going to look at the underworld based on mythology of Pluto. And I'm going to probably start using the word Hades more when I do that. I also want to, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, sometimes I think people attribute in astrology things to Pluto that are probably Saturn or other planets, because Pluto still is a collective energy because it moves so slowly through the signs. And I do think it's important to look at that collective energy with Pluto and sort of see the themes, sort of generational themes that might be important, and then maybe the collective energy and how that might come up in terms of topics that the collective would be interested in studying. And then also I'm going to compare that with Pluto as an individual planet in your chart. I think that it functions differently. And I think that it's important to embrace both of them. Hi, Holly. Holly says hello on chat. And then I'm going to, I am going to talk about some of the themes that are going to be most likely coming out, obviously, during Pluto and Aquarius. I mean, a lot of people are going to be doing that. They're already doing it. Some of it is going to be obviously connected to technology. And then I'm going to try and look at it sort of a little more, maybe some unusual areas, like, for instance, since in Hillman's book, Hades is associated with the dream world, I think it can be associated with maybe advances in sleep, technology, and working with people that have problems with sleeplessness. So we're going to go into that into more depth, because I think that'll be fun and interesting as well. I think you're going to find that's more common, and so you'll have lots of ability to find that elsewhere. And then I do hope to talk a little bit about Pluto and the Aquarian age, whether or not Pluto moving into the sign of Aquarius is going to be announcing the age of Aquarius. Are we still in a transition? Because if you've heard any of my earlier shows, you know that there are different, there's one earlier show I did, but there are different opinions about whether or not we're in the age of Aquarius, we're about to be in the age of Aquarius, or is the age of Aquarius in a couple hundred years? So we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. So those are some of the things I hope to cover. Now, to get you sort of oriented towards just the time frame of Pluto in Aquarius, it does first enter the sign of Aquarius March 23rd, and it's going to kind of go in and out of Capricorn and Aquarius this year because of the retrograde. So you'll have it in Aquarius for about 3 months this year. And then next year, it also goes in and out a little bit less, but still going in and out between Aquarius and Capricorn. And then finally, it will enter it fully into Aquarius November 19th, 2024, and basically stay there roughly two decades. We'll talk about maybe, you know, the ending of that later on. But since we're just getting into it, let's just look at the beginning of it. And there might be some sort of telltale things going on in the collective. If you look at Pluto as a collective energy in March, so if you want to look at the dates around March 23rd, and I believe there's, I don't know if it's like right around the time that the Mars in Gemini completes its retrograde, and that it's going past the point it first was in when it started. It's roughly around that time. I'd have to kind of look at it. So that's kind of interesting to me because there's a connection to Pluto and Mars. But you might want to, you know, the problem with the news when it comes to Pluto is I am not of the opinion that Pluto is dramatic. I think the drama comes sometimes with Pluto interacting with some of the other planets. I think Pluto tends to be maybe a little more subtle than people think. And that's just my opinion. For instance, when I went back and looked at the discovery of Pluto in 1930s, there were other things going on with some of the outer planets at the same time. So it's complicated. I think that it's easy to just sort of say, oh, this is Pluto or this is Saturn. And rather than part of this show itself, my ranting show is to reflect on things and to get you to reflect on, well, is this really true about Pluto? And hopefully this will help you to take a deeper look at it and to maybe see what it has to offer that maybe you haven't thought about before, and that it isn't always a scary energy is what my sense of it is. And maybe having lived somewhat Plutonian themes through my relationship world, I can say there's been definitely some heavy energy, but there's been some really great insights and some really interesting energy through working with Pluto in my relationship world. So those are sort of my reasons for wanting to do it. I also am going to talk a little bit about the tarot and Pluto. There are a couple cards that you can sort of associate with Pluto, and it's maybe, you know, I don't know if all of the astrology decks do or not, but there's definitely a couple that I can talk about as well. So I wanted to first talk a little bit about this book by James Hillman, The Dream in the Underworld, because really when I read that book, it's really what got me really fascinated with Hades. I would say I was fascinated maybe astrologically before with the Pluto return, but it was more impersonal. And when I read this James Hillman book, it became deeply personal in a way I wasn't really expecting. And I will say that if you've not read Hillman before, he's a little difficult to read. He's very well educated and it's a dense kind of energy, but he has these beautiful lines sometimes too. So he's definitely a great writer. And basically, I think this book is being sort of acclaimed as taking the idea of dreams into another dimension, taking it past what Jung and Freud had said. So I wanted to, because, you know, I was really reading, first of all, he has a little chapter on Hades, and actually Hades is throughout this whole book, but he has one like very small chapter. And I wanted to share with you some of the things he writes about Hades based on the mythology. I think I might just read it directly. We have quite a bit of time right now. So I'm going to read from some of this section in his book, again, The Dream in the Underworld. So you can get to know what Hades was like mythologically. And some things were new to me that I had read in this. So let me start here. Hades was, of course, the god of depths, the god of invisibles. He is himself invisible, which could imply that the invisible connection is Hades, and that the essential what that holds things in their form is the secret of their death. And if, as Heraclitus said, nature loves to hide, then nature loves Hades. Now, just that alone, that whole idea of invisibility that's going to come out a little bit more, and the connection to nature, which, of course, is obvious in the myth of Demeter and Persephone, who's, you know, some people say that that is basically an allegory of the four seasons, you know, where, you know, Persephone is not above ground during the winter. And so Demeter, you know, stops everything from growing. And so, of course, it's that allegory, too. But it made me really think about this intense connection to nature that sort of maybe gets overlooked when we think of Pluto as a planet, this connection to the Earth. And I was very excited by that. Then he continues, he says, Hades is said to have had no temples or altars in the upper world, and his confrontation with it is experienced as a violence, a violation, Persephone's rape, the assaults on simple vegetative nymphs, Luce and Minthe, and Iliad. He is so invisible, in fact, that the entire collection of Greek antique art shows no ideal portrait of Hades, such as we are familiar with of other gods. He had no representation attributes except an eagle, which brings out his shadowy affiliation with his brother Zeus. He leaves no trace on earth, for no clan descends from him, no generations. So that's really fascinating, too, that there are no representations of him and that there's no clans here on earth. And so immediately you begin to think, reading this book, and maybe before this book I was thinking this too, that basically, you know, Hades is this other realm, and he's the ruler of this other realm that we have a hard time reaching through our ego or consciousness. But it's important that he was given this realm kind of equally, you know, so we have Neptune was given the ocean, and you have Zeus or Jupiter giving the skies, and then Hades, the ruler of the underworld. And so he's a ruler. And one of the interesting things that you'll find out as we go more deeper into the mythology is he is not death itself. So when people talk about, for instance, Pluto as a planet of death, not all astrologers say that. That's actually not true. There are other gods associated with death in the underworld. But let me continue a little bit more of this. Hades' name was rarely used. At times, he's referred to as the unseen one, more often as Pluto, wealth, riches, or as Trophonios, nourishing. These disguises of Hades have been taken by some interpreters to be covering euphemisms for the fear of death. But then why this particular euphemism and not some other? Perhaps Pluto is a description of Hades, much as Plato understood this god. Then Pluto refers to the hidden wealth or the riches of the invisible. I love that too. And then as he goes on towards the end of this paragraph, this is a great line. Hades is not an absence, but a hidden presence, even an invisible fullness. An invisible fullness. I love that idea. And then you might even start thinking like, wow, is there something connected to Hades with dark matter? You know, so that's the astronomical way I was sort of thinking about things. So you already get this idea that maybe Hades is not what we think it is. And the other thing that's really interesting about Hades is he has this helmet that makes him also invisible, and he shares it with Hermes, and also Athena uses it one point. So this concept of the helmet, James Hillman says, it's basically shows a certain style of covering their heads that both hide their thoughts and perceives hidden thoughts. It is their intentions that become invisible. We cannot perceive where their heads are at, though we may have the sense of a hidden watch over our innermost thoughts, because we can never discover what their covert minds intend. We consider them deceptive, unpredictable, frightening, or wise. So the more, you know, the more you think about that, you begin to think, well, that then do we really understand Pluto? Can we really consciously grasp? Is that the way that I would understand? And I would say probably not, that there probably is some other way to understand how Pluto plays out. And it may, in fact, be connected to our bodies. That's possible because of the element of it being connected to the Earth, and our body is made up of all, you know, the different elements of the Earth. That's a possibility. And again, this is something I'm still reflecting on overall. But I really love that he, James Hillman, just takes this to a whole nother level. He also, towards the end of this chapter, he has another really great thing that he says. He talks about that because Hades' realm was conceived as the final end of each soul, Hades is the final cause, the purpose, the very telos, T-E-L-O-S, of every soul and every soul process. If so, then all psychic events have a Hades aspect and not merely the sadistic or destructive events that Freud attributed to Thanatos. I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, but Thanatos is the god of death in Hades, in the underworld. So this sort of brings up the point that, you know, it's almost like Hades has this connection to the bardo. When I read the book about the bardo by Trungpa Rinpoche, you realize that the bardo is this kind of experience that happens in a variety of ways rather than sort of like these realms that we think. And there's this psychological connection to the bardos, and we go in and out of these different states. And so you can see that also with the idea of Hades that James Hillman is presenting. And I think that for me, that this age, Pluto in Aquarius, it's just a really good time for each of us as individuals to take a look at how Pluto impacts us in our own charts. And of course, it was, I mean, I think I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure Jeffrey Wolf Green was the one that put Pluto on the map in terms of representing the soul in the chart. And I'm still sort of wrapping my mind around his ideas, because it's not just Pluto in the sign in one house. It's also the opposite house and sign and the nodes of the moon that you look at. But he still sees this as an indicator of our soul. And he also, in his book, describes or defines what a soul is, which would be really important to do. And I can't say I agree or disagree with that concept yet, but I think that I think it seems like, from reading James Hillman, I am sort of more agreeing with Hillman that Hades is connected to the process of our soul evolving on a regular basis. But because we don't really understand this realm, it's a different realm. It's even in this book, Hillman talks about how the dream world cannot be interpreted through ego consciousness. And so he calls the dream world, I think, night face and then day face. And it's this idea that, and I've always had trouble interpreting dreams. It never felt quite right. So there's a different way of working with dreams, because they're just a different reality. And so one of the things I think about Pluto personally is in Aquarius is it's going to be a time in which we are more able to see invisible realms, that we are able to find ways to really go into them in innovative ways, whether it is the underworld or some other realm, since I think Pluto could possibly represent invisible realms in general. And then this concept of isolation that does come up in terms of reference to Pluto sometimes. I also think there can be some breakthroughs around where people feel isolated in the world. And I think as a result, it could have a spinoff into understanding suicide. And that's just something I thought about really a few minutes ago, I'm just keep thinking about all this material and it's just sinking in. And that in reality, Pluto really isn't isolated, but it is a different realm. And so to me, I think, let's say if I come from a different space completely, and I feel like no one gets me and no one gets the world I'm in, that can have a very isolating feeling. And I think Pluto and Aquarius can start to open up these places so that maybe someone else will have a glimpse and be able to see you in that realm. So that's one reason why I want to focus on the relationship that Hades, Pluto has with all these different gods and deities, including some like the Fates and the Furies, and of course the obvious Persephone, and of course Demeter. And so how does this play out in our world today, looking at it more from a modern point of view and hopefully bringing some insights and new ideas to it, or at least stimulating you to think about Pluto in a different way? Because I have felt, you're going to hear a lot probably of sort of disaster statements from sort of popular astrology around Pluto and Aquarius, you know, what that means in terms of, and I'm not saying that that's completely off, but I think Pluto demands more of us. I think Pluto wants us to dig deeper. There's it's on astro.com. There is a really cool article called Pluto and Aquarius, the Transition, because we're technically in the transition, by Stephen Hofbauer. And he also has that thought that sometimes we're always, astrologers are always initially going to be talking about disasters and these terrible things that are going to happen collectively. And is that really, really the right way to approach it? And I agree with him. So I would say you could also quickly, it's not a long article, just look up on astro.com. I really enjoyed it, and I'll probably be referencing some of it. Stephen Hofbauer, Hofbauer. So I'm calling this show, I think I started it out saying I was going to call it, you know, Getting to Know Pluto. And then there's a great line in Hillman's book, The Call to Hades. So I feel like this is a call to Hades, and I felt a call myself. And rather than it being a scary call, it was more of a, like an allure, a fascination, something, I'm going to find out some sort of treasure or something that I didn't know about Hades. And I think it can be a very healing thing. And I know that many of us want to become more integrated as people. And I think that as we take anything that has more of a one-dimensional side and we try to bring it into sort of a more rounded view, I think that's the way we begin to integrate ourselves too. So for me, I think this is also an exercise in helping me to become a more whole person by looking at what Hades or Pluto is asking me to look at right now. And this is what I felt with Pluto and going through my 12th house now. It's going to be going there for quite a long time. So luckily, I don't have to rush my journey. So anyway, this is what we're going to do. I don't know what I'm going to start with next. I might start move into the mythology because it's really fascinating, but you'll have to wait until next week's show. In the meantime, I would totally encourage you, if you're interested in astrology and Pluto, to take a look at your natal chart, see where Pluto will be in Aquarius in your particular chart, because that area is going to be the easiest area to access Pluto. So it doesn't mean you can't access it in other areas of your life. So if it's in your first house, it might be something connected to your physical health. If it's in your 10th house, it might be connected to your social status or some of your career. It's just easier to find the themes there because obviously a chart is very it's not one-dimensional. So look for where it's going to be in your chart in the meantime and begin to think about what that might be and if there's any subconscious things, because some people believe Pluto represents the subconscious. This would be a good time to work with subconscious beliefs of any kind in that particular area. So I hope you're going to enjoy this series. Remember, you can book a reading with me and Michael at our website, mysticraven.net. And I look forward to seeing you in a month on my show. Until that time, enjoy your week.